The success of Aaron Pedersen in the ABC drama series Mystery Road, or Miranda Tapsell in Redfern Now, Black Comedy and Clever Man are examples of the Australian public's willingness to embrace cultural diversity on our screens. Historically, though, achieving adequate representation of minority groups has proved difficult, with a 2016 report released by Screen Australia highlighting, among other things, a lack of representation of those from a non-Anglo-Celtic background, particularly with a disability and those identifying as part of the LGBTQI plus community. As the CEO of the Creative Diversity Network UK, Deborah Williams has been charged with the role of working towards achieving greater representation of diversity on screen. Deborah has extensive experience with the creative arts sector, having undertaken groundbreaking work as a diversity manager at the British Film Institute, as well as serving as a senior officer for equity and diversity at the Arts Council England. Deborah, it's great to have you on the program and in Australia.
Ah, thank you.
How did the Creative Diversity Network come about?
In around about 2000, the UK broadcasters started as the Cultural Diversity Network. So it was all about race and ethnicity. And they were sort of, every 2 years, they'd spend their time and within their own organisation doing diversity work, and then at the end of it they do an award ceremony and then pass it on to another broadcaster. Around about 2015 they began to think about how to monitor and think about who is actually on television and making television. So they started the Creative Diversity Network, which is the organisation I run, which is a third sector sort of NGO type organisation. We're independent of them, we're a membership organisation, but basically we operate outside of any single one broadcaster. So that's basically where we came from.
The fact that all major broadcasters were supportive and gave funding, is that a sign that things are starting to become widespread in terms of change on this issue?
I think, yeah, I would say so. And I think, but also the will is also there and continues to be there. You know, we're a membership organisation, so they can, if they feel like it, relinquish their membership. But as there are only the five largest traditional broadcasters in the UK, it would be really obvious if any one of them decided that they didn't want to be involved. So I don't know whether that's carrot or stick behaviour, but for what it is, I'm living with it now and travelling with it. But yeah, they do invest and they do take it seriously. And I think what we are doing now, though, is trying to run a business. So it's less than, oh, it's something they should do because they think it's worthwhile or worthy. It's more about, well, how do you turn this into a business, into an organisation that could eventually become independent and extend its membership beyond the traditional spaces.
Looking back on your own career, how did you navigate your way through the challenges you no doubt faced as someone who didn't fit the classic look that was so often seen on screens at the time?
And now, look, sound, size, all of it. I guess when I look back, and, you know, I'm sort of hurtling towards a zero that we don't want to talk about. But as I look back, it's every time I hit a barrier, I'd find a way around it. So actually my career and my path and getting to where I am now has been a sort of zigzag more than anything. So it's not actually been a straight road. And I think whilst I didn't understand that whilst I was doing it, now I look back at it and I appreciate that immensely, because it meant that I was constantly learning. I would constantly bump into and work with people that I'd never anticipated working with, and in areas I'd never anticipated working in. So it meant that when I did turn up and when I was producing and was making work, you know, on screen and or off screen or performing arts spaces, that I was spreading a little bit of diversity without knowing it, sort of thing. So that's the best I can offer, I think. It was difficult, but it was very much of a zigzag. But each time I learnt and each time I'd go back with something new.
From your perspective, why do you think we've traditionally seen an underrepresentation of minority groups within the creative sector, particularly on screen?
Because people are scared, because people don't like looking at other, because there is an assumption that audiences won't pay for it. And the underlying word for that is discrimination and prejudice, obviously, but also institutions and systems and structures. And I think the way, especially television works, it is who you know, it is networks, and it is sort of where you got your education and where you studied. So if within those spaces you already have low to no levels of people from minority groups or First Nations or others already, your starting point is going to be very low. So actually trying to get to good representation is going to be a long, long journey.
I want to pick up on something you just mentioned a bit earlier, very fleetingly, but there is often an assumption that diversity relates only to culture and ethnicity. What do you think's led to that misconception, and what are the other aspects in which diversity can be represented?
I think it's the misconception, I think, is because it was those groups were the groups that were lobbying hardest. And if you look back over history, whether you go back to the 1930s, 1940s, 1950s, globally or locally, they were always the groups that were lobbying the hardest. And they were the groups that were the last to get. You know, I was looking at a map today of women's suffrage, and there were the women who were either Aboriginal, Indigenous, Black or African were all the last to get suffrage. So it's always been something that's existed within the space. I think the issue then becomes that creates a hierarchy within diversity. And a lot of people think, well, if I get the top of the podium, I don't need to think about the rest of it. But so gender came behind that, I think, in many ways for a lot of people. And gender was quite easy because gender could take away from ethnicity and race. You could really focus on women who looked like you, but they were just women. So that was okay for a lot of people for a long time. I then think that the experience around disabled people and being a disabled person myself, it's been incredibly difficult. And it continues to be incredibly difficult with disability because you have so many impairments, so many conditions, and so many different people within any group. And, you know, the term that people use now in the intersectionality, which for the record was about Black women, let's not forget that. But a lot of people use that now to talk about the multiplicity of identity for all individuals. And I think that people like it to be really easy. So the messier it gets, the more distant people make themselves. So if it's easy to talk about ethnicity and race and gender and try and go, okay, that's it, we can do that. And the rest of it is quite complex.
People often feel a sense of guilt that they're merely a diversity hire. We often hear that from within our own community here, Indigenous community. And it's often something that within the workforces or in universities or wherever people are, they're often made to feel that you're here because you're a diversity hire. What advice would you give to somebody who's feeling that way?
First of all, don't listen to what they're saying. That's the first thing. The second thing is know your craft. So know how good you are at what you do and value that and celebrate it. And that can be within your work environment or workspace, or that can be without. I think sometimes it's very difficult if you are the only one to celebrate your achievements because people will hold that against you. But actually, if outside of those spaces you can celebrate what you achieve, then celebrate what you achieve, because you may be the only one now and you may well be a diversity hire in some ways, but then you are also setting the tone for who comes behind you and what the next diversity hire is. And also think about, just because you're the only one there doesn't mean that you're the only one that ever has been there. There has usually been at least one or two people before you, and they've maybe not succeeded, or they've maybe found different ways to operate within the system. So operate within your own way. Pay no attention to these people because they don't really know what they're talking about, and celebrate what it is you do.
Great.
You're very good at what you do.
Great advice. Now, Deborah, you've been in Australia to deliver a keynote at the Fair Play Symposium in Melbourne, which was presented by Diversity Arts Australia. What was the aim of the event?
The aim of the event was to start talking across diversity, so really starting to think about, in particular, First Nations voices and disabled people's voices within the diversity conversation and discussion. So it was quite a privilege, actually, and an honour to be asked to come and do a keynote and talk about all of that within the creative and cultural industries, which are small industries within themselves. But of course, they have such a massive impact and a massive impact on how people see themselves and how people are seen by others.
From what you've seen during your stay, how does the Australian arts sector compare internationally in terms of diversity in arts?
It's where the UK was like 20 years ago, which is quite
good,
which is
to know.
It's not a bad thing. That's not a
bad
thing.
We've got a long way to go.
there's still some work to be done. Let's put it that way. But I think more than anything, what the last couple of weeks has shown me is that there is a determination to grow and for progress. And there are people ready to take that next step and have the really challenging and awkward conversations and really start to think differently about what diversity is and how inclusive you need to make your diversity space so that as many people as possible are able to operate and be comfortable and safe within those spaces.
Well, it's been wonderful having you in the country to get your perspective, which has such resonance for the issues here. What are the things about Australia that have really resonated with you?
I've had a chance to reflect, which I've not had a chance to do for about 3 years in doing this job, because I've not really had time out away from it.
Well, there's those long-haul flights for starters.
Yeah, those 14-hour flights, they're a joy. But I think more than anything, I think it's helped me really, really drill down into how I do things and the way that I do it being a lot different to the way other people do it, and how to just keep encouraging others to think like that. Because hearing about so many different communities in Australia has helped me understand just how entrenched I am in some ways within the systems that I'm allowed to work within the UK. So I'm going to go back and create a bit more trouble. So it's all your fault, basically.
I love it. We love creating troublemakers here on Speaking Out. It's been lovely to have you in the country and lovely to have you on the show this evening.
Thank you so much. Thanks.
Deborah Williams is the CEO of the Creative Diversity Network UK. And if listeners want to find out more on this issue, be sure to look up the Fair Play Project funded by the Victorian Government's Diversity and Inclusion Initiative.